You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Andrew Rainey. And today, in the weeks and days leading up to the November 7th election here in Asheville, featuring mayoral candidates and city council seats, we have in the studio with us today Kim Roney, who is running for city council. Kim, thanks for coming in today.
Oh, yeah, it's always a pleasure to be in the Asheville FM studios. And once again, thank you so much for your volunteer efforts here at the station and keeping local news programming alive on the radio for the people.
So in this particular election, got a wide variety of issues present in Asheville. It's taken on various levels of consternation of the people living here. So we're hoping to cover a few of these topics, looking at each candidate. So the first that we're looking at here is your thoughts on maintaining a balance between Asheville's developing tourism industry and meeting the needs and interests of Asheville citizens to keep Asheville livable.
So being an artist-musician family, I am very familiar with making ends meet on stagnant, unreliable wages in a tourist economy. I'm very thankful for the work that I've had. I've worked at some of the best restaurants, bars, and venues in town. But being a piano teacher and my husband being an artist means that we are working two jobs, if not three, at any given point, and spending all of our extra time on volunteer efforts that benefit the community. And when I think about the ways that we can address this balance that you're talking about or what we're trying to achieve, I think there's a couple of tools that we can use. One is we can prioritize local independent businesses that pay living wages. So if we can provide tax incentives on the back end for to offset the cost of running business for those businesses that are putting those dollars back into the community and the economy by paying their folks living and housing wages, then it's going to benefit the whole community. So that's one tool. Another one is I think we have an opportunity here to have a positive conversation about where our tourist dollars go. Council appoints members to the Buncombe County Tourism Development Authority. This is the unelected body that oversees the distribution of our tax dollars that come out of the tourist economy here in Asheville. But they do provide grants. So can we ask for a proposal for infrastructure improvements, knowing that better sidewalk and bike infrastructure and improvements to something like, say, our transit center. That's good for business because it connects employers with their employees and customers. And it's good for the tourist economy because we have the highest bike pedestrian accident ratio in the state of North Carolina. And that's not a list we want to be number one on. But all those things make it really more livable for the people of Asheville. Right now, Councilwoman Julie Mayfield is the city council liaison to the Buncombe County Tourism Development Authority, and you can get more information about the Tourism Development Authority at AshevilleCVB.com. So that's where I'm talking about the Tourism Product Development Fund or maybe Workforce Development Funds.
That leads to the next question at hand concerning what affordability looks like in Asheville regarding housing. How would you define affordability?
So there are two phrases you're going to hear a lot in the city council election because they're a huge impact on the working people of Asheville. One is a living wage. So thankfully, we have an advocacy group in town called Just Economics, and they pull data on what is a living wage. Right now, that's set at $13 an hour, and right now, the city staff make a living wage. So I'm really thankful that our city council in the past few years has prioritized setting a good example by doing what we can do. We can't require a living wage because of state legislation. Our hands are tied, right? But the city can pay its own staff a living wage. I'm expecting that number is going to jump because when you talk about what a housing wage is, like being able to afford housing in this town when the cost of is going up so quickly and so high in a very competitive rental market with 51% of the city being renters, housing wage is close to $17 an hour, and that's a significant gap. So can you make a living wage and afford to live here? And the answer is, first, people aren't making a living wage, and second, the living wage is so far away from the housing wage that people are moving out to the county. And if we think that parking and traffic is an issue now, it's going to become more of an issue as our workforce is pushed outside of the city limits. So affordability is, can I afford food, water, and shelter in addition to childcare costs and education costs and transportation costs? There's a lot of work to be done, but we are prevented from, once again, from the state level, from setting our own municipal living wage. So while we're working on that, there are some things that we can do. Housing is a really tricky one because there is so much, there's only so much that we can do. I do think some really helpful toolkit things we can look at are land trusts and limited equity cooperative ownership. So we're talking about building on a land trust, not just for renters, but also for ownership. And we can also improve our transit system because transit is access to jobs, education, childcare, groceries, and it's doable. And it's within our means to do it. Other cities in the state of North Carolina are running fare-free systems like Boone, North Carolina, and Chapel Hill's been running theirs free since 2002. It's also important to note cities like Clemson in South Carolina, close by, has been running a fully electric fleet free fare since the 90s.
So for listeners who may not be familiar with a land trust situation, could you explain how that would affect affordability?
Sure. I'm not as well versed in this as some, but there is a very active group in our community that's working on a land trust right now. And what it means is that you have a nonprofit organization where they have ownership of a piece of land and they manage that piece. And by having the land costs stay affordable, sort of like think about like a national park kind of situation, by having that land protected, that makes the cost of building on it less. And I wish that we had done this years ago when the cost of the value of land was lower, but land is one of the most expensive part of building housing right now. And then with limited equity cooperative ownership with that, you would be able to build permanently affordable housing on that land. And then that property doesn't have to increase in value and make it so that it's impossible for people to afford the space. Once again, I'm not the most well-versed on this, but I fully support it.
So in that case, cities or potentially real estate companies that have bought into the city's support of a fixed rate or maybe like tax incentives.
Well, it would need to be something like city-owned land, like the city owns land off of Charlotte Street, and that would be a place we could consider building affordable housing, land trusting it. Also, I know there's talk about the need to expand our transit operations, so I've heard that it's possible for us to look at where the current bus management offices are and the maintenance for the bus. That place may be available for land trust as well.
What are your thoughts on short-term rentals here in Asheville?
So Asheville has a really long history of tourism and also of bed and breakfast culture. We had to remember like the Biltmore Estate was built because of the Vanderbilt family coming here for health purposes, and why the Grove Park was built, and that people were coming here for health reasons. So we have a long culture of making space in our town and in our homes for visitors. So I want to see homestay stay. Homestay is the permit where you can rent out a part of your house, and it's helping people to offset the cost of living. And I know from my own personal experience being the primary income provider in our home that if something happened to me, it would be possible for my husband to stay in our home by renting a room in our house. So I can certainly empathize with why and how that works, and that's why I support homestays. The conversation about short-term rentals, though, is more broad and complex because we haven't fully regulated short-term rentals the way that we need to keep it from property management companies just buying up all of our rental stock and renting them out short-term rentals. And we can't compete with that rent, right? So if I'm able to afford $8,000 to $10,000 a year in rent, but someone can make something like $25,000 to $30,000 off of the same space, I can't compete with that. It's three times more than I can afford. So what I want to see us do is, like I mentioned, a room in my home that would be rentable. If that same amount of space was in a disconnected basement or over a garage apartment, like a mother-in-law suite, that's currently illegal. And I want to see if we can bring our community together in a way to make that process work for folks who have a room that's not inside of their home but on their property, like maybe owner-occupied, in a way that doesn't just make it possible for us to run amok and have all of our housing be vacation rentals. I don't want to live in like Myrtle Beach, you know? But also we have to look at a third part of this, which is adding to the complexity of the equation. At our last city council meeting, I watched on October 3rd, the council was looking at the form-based code for Haywood Road. And this goes from where Haywood intersects with Patton all the way down to where the Gray Eagle is in the roundabout. And they were looking at, would they make it possible as a use by right for a builder to build up to 20-room condo-style short-term rental micro-hotels? And I don't want that for the spines of our neighborhoods either. And I recognize that if we allowed that for Haywood Road, which is a business corridor in West Asheville, then we needed to make sure that we were setting a precedent that wouldn't see that same thing happen along Merriman Avenue and along Charlotte Street and along Swannanoa River Road, because I don't think Asheville wants that for our neighborhoods.
One thing that we've seen a lot, particularly over the summer, what is your position on the removal of local Confederate monuments and plaques, particularly after seeing cities like Charlottesville, Baltimore, and New Orleans take action in particular ways?
I just want to say that I'm speaking from a point of privilege here, but I think it's important that we acknowledge the historical context, the intent of white supremacy and racism. And we're at a position right now where we're starting to have meaningful conversations about reconciling the hate and trauma that these symbols have caused for the people of our country. I do support the removal of the Confederate monuments fully, but I also think that it's really important as an ally, and if I'm elected as a representative, to invite persons of color and leaders in that community to the table to guide with their lived experience, not only as we address the symbols of racism and white supremacy in our community, but also institutional and structural racism and policies around our housing and our jobs and our school system, because the symbols are just the tip of the iceberg to this conversation, right?
Another downtown space being the Haywood Street property or Pit of Despair across from the PAC Library. What do you think should be done with this particular space?
So I had the opportunity to go to the Haywood Page meeting, one of the final ones they were talking about, like the uses. They were not tasked with design. And our next city council is going to approve the design for the park. And this has been a really controversial topic. And I have to acknowledge that it's because our community wants us to prioritize people and planet over profit. And as we're dealing with gentrification and root shock and feeling like our city is slipping out from our grasp, to be able to have space for the public to use is really important and to gather. What I think we have an opportunity to do here is, because we are going to be, or our council is going to be tasked with the next design, is to prioritize edible trees, to prioritize multi-use space. And I want to see if we can look at the designs that the Clemson students did that worked on that Haywood Page process task force. Several of them suggested closing down the street in between that property and the basilica. And if we have an opportunity here to prioritize walkability and pedestrian safety and fix that corner, which is kind of a nightmare as a pedestrian and bicyclist to navigate, and I'm sure for elders and disabled persons as well, then let's do it. And let's do something we could be really proud of. Now, does that mean that we can have public bathrooms in that space, that we need to have community garden spaces there? Okay, let's talk about that as we're doing the design process.
And last on the ballot, there will be a voter referendum asking Asheville residents if they support dividing the city into electoral districts. How do you think this will impact future elections?
We were just talking about that when hanging out after the Buncombe County Young Democrats and Asheville Sustainable Restaurant Workforce Forum last night. There's a handful of things around the district in the city that we have to acknowledge. One, Asheville is in North Carolina, and North Carolina is really good at gerrymandering. So as soon as we district the city, it is going to be a constant uphill battle not to gerrymander, especially along lines of race. It will pit neighborhoods against each other. And for those two main reasons, I cannot support the districting of the city. So I will be voting no on that referendum. But there is another conversation here about people who feel that they can't get a representative voice on council. And as I was having that conversation with some folks that have very different opinions than myself, they were saying that they were never going to get their representative on council until they district the city. So I asked them, the three gentlemen that were, I was talking to, I was like, what neighborhood do you live in? East Asheville. What neighborhood do you live in? North Asheville. What neighborhood do you live in? West Asheville. I was like, well, if you all get one candidate that you have like the strong opinion that you feel like is the best person to be your representative on council and you district the city, you can't vote for them. And they were just like eyes wide open. Oh no, we shouldn't district the city. We'll never get a representative on council. And I was like, good, go tell your state legislators that story that you don't want to district the city. And I think when we debunk the myth about what districting does, and if we get folks informed about how that process can work against our best interest, then maybe we can start having some healing conversations that are larger with people who have very different opinions than us.
Kim Roney, thanks for coming in and speaking a little bit more about some of these topics.
These questions are the ones that are impacting Asheville the most. And I just have to say, I know that my friends and neighbors here in Asheville, North Carolina, and even the people that have different opinions than myself, we have the capacity to do really meaningful work. And part of that work means having conversations with each other. And the other part of that work means showing up to vote. I want to see us have record turnout on November 7th. For folks who can't show up on November 7th, early voting is happening right now at 77 McDowell Street.
As the weeks come up to the election, be sure to stay tuned to Asheville FM as we feature interviews with each of the city council candidates and mayoral candidates. You can also check out AshevilleFM.org, where we'll have those interviews posted for your listening pleasure.